that's just a continuum for the next hour. And the lecture, which is possible, will be assisted by Professor Zhang of our Tsinghua University.
把它拿回到第一个那个群，我给你找回到第一个那个群，因为那里边有这个第一个，对，第一个PPT是吧？
对，
第一个。好，你要不要让他们大家先进来，或者让他们拿中文题也可以啊，随便让把气氛弄得就是随便的就好。OK。那这个要需要调一下吗？
这个不用，这挺好，我觉得还可以。
是吧？
我觉得
第一个那个他会拿，是因为他用那个可能会镜头开始。
你看这个，
你觉得怎么样？我觉得还可以，
觉得还可以，好像亮度需要调吗？
你是，我要 repeat the homework. And if there is any question, I think all the students can sit in a little bit closer.
Yeah. Don't be too far away. It seems to be I'm very frightening to you.
And the question in Chinese is also welcome.
That's okay. Ask a question in any way you want. Okay. Let's come closer. So this is rather informal, right? Informal discussions. Whatever questions or comments you have. I really scare people away.
把这个高度降低一点，能这么好一点吗？不要直接照。这可能还行，这么看着还行啊，还行吗？没有调对比度吗？亮度怎么着？调的。亮度在这，最主要的就是这个。这样呢，这好像没干什么好了，这可能差不多啊。
So even for the E plus minus machine at such high energy, and still a lot of hydraulic structure. Like the Voltaic Williams structure, you still have the
from
photons,
the beams. Yeah, still there.
But it's probably it's a lot better than the photon-photon backscattering, right? The photon-photon backscattering has a much worse.
Not only the background. The thing is that you have really a photon in the initial state. The gamma, the photon, the plus and minus for sure has a lot of background because of secondary gamma-gamma interaction. But then these you can really identify them because they make most of the time low PT hadrons, so they just go down. I should have brought this transparency. I don't have it in my talk. There was a nice study on gamma-gamma interactions when there are the gamma-gamma backgrounds, the implications on the detector. Fortunately, one has not so much access here to the internet. Otherwise, I still have it on my computer, so I can put it into my talk tomorrow.
That would be nice. I want to see this at some point.
I put it in my talk. I just put it at the end of one of my presentations. And that is I have on my computer, so this part is ready.
Yeah. 先帮我倒一下茶去，接点热水。 So questions? If you have no questions, I'll ask you. Any questions? Anything? But nothing personal.
Does anyone know how far this interplanar?
from the location layers, geography.
One way is the linear
planar. How far?
Yeah, space time, not on the space.
Space time. Yeah.
I don't care distance, but I want to know.
Ask all of the world this question. I think this is a highly political question. I don't ask the world to moral. No one of us here, well, Peter Hoyer, he gives the moral this video talk. And I think you ask him this question. I mean, he is one of the leaders in this project, and this is a highly political question. So I would not feel capable to answer it. So there are rumors like 2015, but no, Rolf is for sure the person to ask these questions. Or when it comes to funding, costs, and so on, all these questions, it's better if you really ask them while tomorrow. It's a video.
Okay.
Is
it possible
location
more of this
type of... Again, political.
So,
in physics, we are not political.
So, in particular for the students, you understand my question here. I give you the general picture to say if you search for new particles, you need to start from some new particle like a Z prime, and then you have to find the decay channels eventually down to the observable particles like in the standard model. Okay. So here, if these particles decay into two leptons, and that's a very good signature already. They will show up in the detector. So we heard the talk by Raman today about the detector to detect different particles. Even in the beginning of my talk, I give you some tables to show you what kind of particles will show up in which component of the detector. Now, if I ask you if this Z prime coupled to the standard model of fermions also coupled to the W pair, can you try to outline some decay channels and what kind of final state particles you may search for in order to look up for this Z prime? So, is this a clear question for you? This is some typical things that you want to know when you want to do collider phenomenology. When you want to do collider phenomenology, you look for new particles, you look for new states, you look for new physics from your new theory, from your new motivation. But eventually, down to the Earth, you have to detect those kind of things in your detector from the standard model-like particles. So that's what you eventually need to do. Then, if this is a Z prime to couple to standard model particles, you say that it will decay to lepton pairs. So typically, it includes electrons and muons, and possibly tau. Tau will behave somewhat differently, right? I mentioned. But then it also decay to a QQ bar, and this QQ bar will give you two jets, typically. Maybe this will decay to heavy particles. If this is very heavy, it probably will decay to TT bar. Then that will be somewhat different. And the top will decay to, top quark itself will decay to a W and B. And W will decay to either leptonically or two jets. So those are the final states you should think about. And then you see which channel may be easier to search from the experimental aspect, which channel has a larger branching that is desirable for you to do. Or similarly, this one may decay to a W pair, as I mentioned. Then this will decay, a W pair will give you maybe two leptons and two neutrinos, or maybe two leptons and two jets, or maybe four jets. So those are the channels you want to think about is how to define your observable signatures. So again, this is just a typical example. Whatever new physics you want to look for, eventually you want to identify the observable final states. And normally, these leptons will be easier to identify because the resolution and the detection is a lot better in your detector. However, the leptons usually suffer from some somewhat smaller branching fraction. So each branching fraction to W to lepton is only about 10%, typically 11% or so. But if you have both electrons, so that's electron, it's a 10% square. So maybe, you, of course, you have a cross-channel electron muon and so on and so forth. Typically, it will be something like 4% total or so. But hydronic mode is something like 70% typically for the hydronic mode. So the hydronic mode has a larger branching, but more difficult to reconstruct, to identify observationally. Leptonic channels are easier to observe, but suffer from some kind of a branching fraction, lower branching fraction. So you always think about these kind of problems. And this is why I ask you to list the final decay channels and then gradually gear yourself towards the observation, the title. Okay? Any comments? And so that's my purpose to assign this problem to you. No questions then? Okay. More of another one. I ask you to work out this kinematics. This kinematics is it's essentially the T-channel singularity. Sorry. I ask you to, you see that if this scattering is a forward, which means cosine theta is 1, or the theta is a 0, 0 degree angle scattering. The scattering is towards the initial direction, and this T, this amount of star variable T goes to 0. So T usually is a propagator, yeah.
Maybe a remark to this T, if you look at what
just for this exercise, if you look at Rutherford scattering, you find also 1 over sine to the 4 theta half, and basically this is what this T is, and it's also a T-channel reaction, and there you get the singularity, because in the cross-section you will get there something like 1 over T, over T to the T square.
Yeah, so that is, for example, it's a part of this question here. Which diagram? I asked which diagram has singularity. Are they physical? Or are they observable? So this is a very, very simple basic question. There are two singularities, right? One is this a T-channel singularity as we have been discussing. And the other singularity is the S-channel singularity if the Z is massive and these two particles can hit the mass shell. So these four diagrams have only two singular diagrams. One is S-channel singularity, but this singularity is regularized by the width. The Z is unstable, and it has finite width to smear that out. That's the Gregg-Wegener resonance. Okay. So this singularity is regularized by that. But this singularity is interesting. You may argue this singularity, as Roman just commented, it's physical. If experimentally you really put your detector closer to the beam, that the cross-section increases exactly like what Raman argued. It's something like 1 minus cosine theta squared. Then you expand this close to that one, you have sine theta, essentially sine theta squared, and squared as a full power.
This is a real problem, because you, from this Barber scattering, you later on at linear collider, you derive the luminosity. So you need to know this, to measure this cross-section, you need to also deal with these singularities very well, because in order to have a precise explanation of the luminosity.
So then, this is really the correct angular dependency. This is a Coulomb force. We discussed this today. So this is a Coulomb force. You long range all. Martin Ling also discussed this too. Martin Ling called about this Coulomb singularity. This is the same origin. Masses, spin one particle change, give you this the Coulomb singularity. This to a large extent, this is physical. If you go to closer to the beam, then you really find this behavior. Now, as a theorist, you may argue, really, it's diverging infinity? Of course, nature doesn't have infinity. So why is it not really infinity? First of all, experimentally, don't worry. You always have some finite angle. You never, if you see the beam, then what's the definition of scattering? So experimentally, it's okay to have any small, very small or finite angle. Observationally, that's okay. But theoretically, I think it comes from the reason that you treat this, if you really consider no theory, in a very long range, this is long range force. It comes from the long range interaction. The long range, Coulomb interaction one long range, because of one of r. This, if you cut out something, you won't have this. For example, this is z. This z doesn't have a singularity, because this z is massive. But the potential is not a Coulomb potential, it's a Yukawa potential. It has the 1 over r behavior, but also has the exponential suppression. So this one doesn't have singularity. Even this is the exactly same massless particle. But the propagator has mass to regularize. But photon doesn't. Photon is massless. So there is a serious Coulomb singularity. That is the mistreatment if you consider this a plane wave, but and also consider it infinite far away, because long range this distance. So, rigorously speaking, there's no real physical infinity. It's a lack of the rigorous treatment, if you want to argue. But observationally, that's okay. Observationally, this follows the rule very, very precisely. Some people may argue, really, there is an infinity or not. There's no infinity. It depends on your treatment. Our treatment always has certain limitations, always has some approximation. The field theory calculation considers this a plane wave, two plane wave, scattering, and it's a good approximation in some finite sided anyway within your beam. It's certainly not infinitely broad plane wave, two electron plane wave. So therefore, really there's no, realistically there's no infinity. But within this approximation, the Coulomb long range singularity behaves exactly like your experimental observation. So actually, this question has a lot to think about if you want. Any disagreement? We all agree.
The integration will always
have
some time, so it
doesn't happen. What do you mean by some time?
It means when changing the cross-section,
Why you input some cut? Theoretically, from theoretical calculation, I don't want to impose any cut. I want to ask you, what is total cross section? It's divergent. It's infinite. That's my question. I'm telling you, this is physical. This diagram from the previous propagator, this is infinity. Just look at this diagram. You calculate that diagram without any cut. It's infinity. See, that's a singular. The T-channel singularity there. Of course, this Coulomb, even you put the electron mass in it, it's still infinity. That's a long-range Coulomb force. So long-range Coulomb force, 1 over r behavior, it's really singular. You need to put a cutoff in it. Even in
can
the
this be regularized when you regularize the electron mass?
That's for the photon radiation.
Yeah.
Not for the photon exchange. Photon exchange, two massive particles of photon exchange. This is a Coulomb environment physical. If you have a photon radiation to come somewhere, a physical, on-shell photon radiation there. Yeah. It's regularized by the electron mass. It's from, I derived it, I didn't derive. I show you that the effect of photon approximation, you have logarithmic dependence on the electron mass. That's a regulator for the photon radiation there. It's there. I told you, I said that depends on your treatment. You should not treat everything as an infinitely far away plane wave. Because in reality, we are counting beams.
Yeah.
So this singularity is within our approximation limitation. This calculation is not applicable to two electrons infinitely far away. That's the origin. See, this question is very deep. Any further comment? Okay.
Could you explain what happens when you make the realm transformation to the p-channel singularity? I mean the singularity, you make the realm transformation, the angle transformation.
P variable itself is the Lorentz environment.
variable itself is a learning environment. So the singularity, the singular behavior is not changed. The quality, the physical quality of behavior is independent of the learning transfer. It's a frame independent statement. However, the angular distribution of course depends on which frame you are sitting. If you sit at a different frame, the angle definition changes according to the tangent theta and the gamma, some it's the standard of the learning transformation for the angle. The angle changes from one frame to the other given by the learning transformation. But the singular overall singular behavior remains the same. It is a vessel physical. T itself, all these STU variables are Lorentz environment quantity. This equation is applicable for the photon collider stuff. Because the photon collider stuff, the energy spread is a lot broader than the typical physical width for the Higgs and other events. So you should convolute this Bragg-Wigner form with this energy spectrum. And this is important to remember, actually. For that case, almost like the Higgs production in hadron collider in the gluon fusion as well. And the cross-section is always directly proportional to the decay, partial decay width for the final state and the partial width for the initial state. And if you measure the cross-section, you measure the distribution. So that's a typical case. But here is the line shape argument. The width is broader than your energy resolution. Your energy resolution really can sit at different points. Standing over the line shape of the Bragg-Wigner
red. What is L in this formula?
This is a luminosity spectrum. So you have luminosity spectrum broader than your width. So wherever you sit there, just evaluate the normalization. It's essentially normalization. Luminosity distribution over the energy variable. The first one, actually, you can do this formally. You can draw a diagram. You can draw a diagram to say e plus or minus to some intermediate state and to some final state. Then you consider this as a propagator. Remember, the propagator actually is always a spin sum of the wave function, right? For the gate boson case, it's typically minus g mu nu or that sort. That is a sum over the polarization vector over the spin. And for the fermions, it's also something like a momentum slash plus the, of course, plus the mass. And that is similar to the projection operator, like a UU bar sum of that. So you write that way, you split the propagator into the initial piece and the final state piece, and that eventually leads you to this initial part partial wave, final part partial wave with the Bragg-Wigner resonance. And the sum gives you how many states contributing in the middle. 2j plus 1 how many contributing states in the propagator. The vector has the three polarization, mass vector, and the scalar is only one, fermions will be two, and things like that. So 2j plus 1 is really angular momentum state counting. So it's rather easy to show. So that's how you derive this formula. The formula is kind of a powerful tool. You should remember this formula as well. Actually, this is a good exercise. This is something that you should know once you know the field theory calculation. And everybody should try this out. It's tedious. Probably takes you 2 or 3 pages. And but that's something you want to know. Yeah, I think physical meaning is probably the same. Narrow width, I think so. I think it's the same meaning.
Narrow width means that we take the width to be essentially zero.
Narrow width simplification. I think this is a very important tool also to learn. Maybe you explain it more.
Yeah. You can see here, this is a so-called narrow width approximation. But somewhere in between, this is actually, that's another homework for you. This one is a Bragg-Wigner resonance. You can see that if this, the mass, the system inert mass, the momentum squared, is very close to the mass, this term is not very important anymore. This constant term is the regulator. However, if this term is very far away from the mass, then here, if this is the mass term, and this is the energy squared, you can see that the Bragg-Wigner shape goes like this. So this width, how far away is governed by that width? Okay, this is the half height, so this is governed by the width. It's here. But you see, even from numerical viewpoint, this resonance is rather singular. It's not a very smooth function. When you perform the Monte Carlo integration, the smooth function is best. Okay. Smooth function in Monte Carlo means you just drop one point, you get the full answer. Okay. The flat distribution is best for Monte Carlo simulation. So therefore, whatever other integration variables you have, you try to make that variable change into some smoother function. That improves your Monte Carlo simulation. So here it's not very smooth. So one way to do that is trying to redefine the integration variable. The integration variable there is the environment mass of the system. That is essentially the so-called the S hat, that the S there. You change that variable into an angular integration. So eventually you can change that angular integration something like half the width times angle and the mass pi d theta, I think. D theta is 2 pi. D theta from minus 1, the cosine theta, let's say d theta is from d theta equal to pi. No this factor 2 here. So if you change that integration variable, I don't precisely remember the definition, but I think it's you change this into an angle. You can rewrite that integration. That is that integration like a ds s minus square plus the width square mass square. You change this integration variable. You can make this distribution a flat distribution. So there's no approximation in this variable change. In this variable change, you can make this equal. So you make this distribution a lot smoother distribution. So that gives you a very good approximation. However, the integration range, of course, is from pi to minus pi. I think it's 2 pi. If that's 2 pi, there's a factor of 2 here. I don't remember. The integration gives you the same normalization as that one. Okay, so here is no approximation yet. But however, if this is a very, very singular here, this is very singular, the integration here is improved. You can see, you can show that this function is equivalent to a delta function. If the width is narrower and narrower, the width is narrower and narrower with this, it tends to be a delta function form. Then this integration can be further rewritten in terms of a pi and actually a delta function. This delta function is S minus the square. So here, the delta function here is in the limit because when you approximate this distribution by a delta function, you take the zero width limit. So that's where the so-called zero width, it's a narrow width approximation comes from. Here, this relation has a limiting approximation that the width is width goes to zero. Because this goes to zero and this goes to infinity, so the ratio is supposed to remain finite. But either way, there's two singularities there. The width is zero, the height is infinity. So the integration quantity is fixed by this quantity. So that's where this approximation is under assumption the width is zero. So that's called a narrow width approximation, the on-shell approximation. And here it's not. Here it's arbitrary, but improved integration. A lot better than this in terms of the simulation.
So for Hadron kind of accumulation, you will have such kind of integration.
That's more popular.
Hadron, the center mass energy is fixed.
No, no, no. It depends on which final state particle you are thinking. You are thinking, what you are saying is that what if the E plus or minus machine produced a resonance? Yeah, but however, as I mentioned, it depends on the relation between the fixed energy and the width. If the width is so narrow, much narrower than your energy resolution, then you how can you say your energy is fixed? Your energy is always your energy always has a spread.
Well, in your
that's because you are talking about the Z production, for example. Z production, the Z width is 2 GeV. You are talking about the Z prime production. The Z prime production, Z prime width is 10 GeV. That's very, very broad in comparison with your energy spread. Therefore, you assume your energy is fixed. But if I'm talking about Higgs production, my Higgs production, the width is 2 MeV, then your energy spread is probably broader than that. Then your energy spread is like this. Your energy distribution looks like this. But my Higgs is like this. You cannot assume your fixed energy. Your energy has a distribution. It's not fixed anymore in comparison with that physical quantity.
That's
then you have to use my second formula. That's my second formula.
In
which calculation are you talking about?
I mean that students do a calculation.
Give me the example.
Hydro, for example, they consider the synonymous energy 500 GeV, and they give you some cross-section.
There's no resonance.
How large the uncertainty?
Give me the process, I answer you. Give me the process. I gave you the process, you cannot answer me. I gave you the Higgs production, of course, small. E plus minus directly annihilate to a very narrow Higgs, 2 MeV. Can you assume 500 GeV? Of course not. It's a 500 GeV plus minus 1 GeV. Your energy is 500 GeV plus minus 1 GeV on top of my 2 MeV physical width. How can you say your energy is fixed? Your energy is very broad. It's not fixed anymore.
How do I know?
You use my second formula.
Okay.
Then if you didn't, you are wrong. Yeah, check my physics report. I wrote a physics report on this. It's a muon collider argument. Muon collider has extremely sensitive thing to do the Higgs line shape or something. You have to use the second formula now. The reason you always assume fixed energy is you don't have this narrow resonance in the final state. Z is okay, Z prime is okay, W pair production is even no resonance. That's because your energy spread is irrelevant. Energy uncertainty is irrelevant. It's very, very narrow sharp width in comparison with your other physical quantity. That's the reason. That's fully justified. I'm not saying you are wrong. You're fully justified for this reason. But if you consider a very narrow production, much narrower than your energy spread, then your energy is not fixed, my width is fixed.
You agree?
But if the intermediate boson is very heavy, far from it's more heavier, it's much heavier than the center mass energy.
You have no problem either, because this term is very, very large, and this is irrelevant.
Okay.
There's no resonance.
Yeah.
Just almost like, yeah. In that case, this is irrelevant. Your real energy is very, very, it's very much lower.
Mm-hmm.
And this mass is far away. You haven't reached the resonance yet.
Mm-hmm.
So you only reach the tail. You only reach the, there's a real resonance, but your energy is only here.
Okay.
So of course, this is irrelevant. Simply use this one. There's no singularity, no uncertainty. anyways, yeah. Okay. Are you learning or you are sleeping?
T线上的奇异性，我看不出来是怎么出来的，你能用中文再解释一下吗？好。
这个 ，sorry， time to learn Chinese。你看，这个 diagram 呢，是这样一个 electron coming in， the other positron coming in， 有一个 masses 零质量的 photon exchange， 是不是？是这样的是吧？那这个 propagator 你写出来这个 matrix element 以后呢，你前面有一些 wave functions。有这样的 wave function， 中间呢你有一个 photon 的 propagator， 对吧？这个 photon 的 propagator 呢，实际上呢正好是这个P1 减去那个 Q1 平方，是这样的，对不对？那实际上是正好是这个是 T， 这就为什么我们靠这个 T channel， 这 T channel 就是这个 propagator 的性质是由这个 T 决定的。对，这叫 collinear singularity， 只有共线的那段才有，这是为什么它共线的时候是最大的。为什么我说 singular 呢？ singular 就是那段时候是无穷大，原则上讲它共线的时候就无穷大，不共线的时候是有一定的分布，那个分布像那个 Raman Kalman 那样，就是那个如此佛闪烁的那个叫分布，你越往共线它就越大，几乎到零共线到完全共线零的时候，再按你公式算是无穷大，这就是为什么叫 singularity。我就为什么说这个，对，对。
你用中文解释一下这原因。
对，这个你要是把它做非相对论近似的话呢，在常论里面应该学过。你要把它做非相对论近似的话呢，这个的相互作用正好是库仑相互作用。第一级修正时候，一个光子近似的时候呢，做非相对论近似的时候，正好是一个库仑相互作用。实际上正好是一个用这个库仑式来讲的，是那个有一个。one over r 的一个 singularity， 所以这意思说你要把所有的这个散射全加进去，波函数平面波函数加起来呢，你要把这个one over r 加到它俩分这个 separation 呢分到无穷大的时候也要加进来，那实际的库仑式里面告诉你那个无穷远的地方呢也要加进来，那你要加起来，你用量子力学里面你算过库仑式的那个散射情况，那它是你要所有全加起来的话，这是无穷大的，因为到无穷远地方的还有相互作用，所以这是长距离的时候，那个这个库仑相互作用那个 fall off 不够快，它是有那个有贡献的，是长距离的时候就是有贡献，是无穷大的，所以这是那个长距离库仑相互作用的一个物理结果，这是 physical， 这不是那个假设的。当时我就又进一步了，为什么我没看观察到无穷大？那是另一回事。那说你怎么处理这个计算问题？就是刚才说，那个是完全是另一回事。我们可以说可以不说。那这个应该理解为这个是物理的结果。这个完全是单光子那个近似下的库仑相互作用的那个奇异性，是这个 T channel。而且单光子因为它是有零质量的，你这个 T 要不然的话，你要加上它的质量嘛，减去它的质量，减上它的质量。要是 Z 包上一个 change 的时候呢，这个有很大一个质量，即使你在那个零角度散射的时候呢，它还是有一个很大的质量在那压低，它是短，这个你要把这个要是用那个单光子近似非相对论展开的话呢，你这个你回去做那个傅里埃变换，不是傅里埃变换，拉普拉斯变换，拉普拉斯变换，你回去做拉普拉斯变换一看呢， 1 over R 就是这个 1 over T 的那个性质，那个 Yukawa coupling one over r 再乘上一个 E 指数的质量乘上那个距离的那个，就是这个 T 减去那个 m 平方的这个相互作用，正好这个是个这个有汤川式Yukawa式的那个来源，所以它没有 singularity， 而这个零质量的光子有在那个零角度散射的时候是有 有 physical singularity， 它有 physical 的 correspondence， 它 physical correspondence 就是因为那个零质量光子那个库伦相互作用的那个长程效应。这回清楚一点没有？嗯，所有东西都是联系在一起的。你回想一下，你在算那个薛定谔方程的那个库伦解的时候，它也有类似长程效应。它不像其他的那个短程就解啊，马上就具有很收敛很快。
我想问一个那个关于那个就是双光，就是你说就是说知道这个双光子，就是如果存在那个 X 条件满足的话，那它有可能会产生这个就是粒子。就是说，我问题是那个引，如果引力产生的话，它会不会衰变？如果是衰变的话，它那个怎么来区分它的标，它的那个怎么来从它的标准中的背景？
这个啊，这个可能得用它的那个角分布，就是看的 angular distribution， 这个角分布来那个做分波展开，看它的那个分波情况。比如说咱们举一个例子哈，你说这个光子双光子散射进来，那么如果要是有引力子的话，引力子跟任何东西都有耦合的，所以这引力子到任何程度都有耦合，一般来讲，所以这个地方呢就可能是这种引力子在这逐渐传递。在这个有这个 large extra dimension 的时候呢，这个 graviton 这些都是叫 close Klein states， 它是相对来讲是比较 massive， 都是有质量的。这个它的质量呢，这 close Klein particle 的质量呢，是跟你这个 extra dimension 的 size 一个成反比。这 extra dimension 要是非常非常小的话，它质量非常大，那你就看不到它了。这是为什么说在超弦理论里边呢，这些 extra dimension 的 compactification 的 scale 都会在接近那个 string scale， 甚至接近于那个 Planck scale。 那你这个要有 close Klein states 的话，你也没有法看到。可是在有这个 large extra dimension， 就是这个 dimension 比较大的时候呢，那它 dimension 很大的话呢，它这里边 close Klein particles 相对来讲就可能比较轻了。所以这是为什么我们现在有些人在考虑这 collider consequence， 因为这个质量可能会相对来讲比较轻。就这样的话，它都是有质量。零质量那个呢，是我们的 graviton。我们真正的现在我们看的 gravity， 真正的这个 Newton gravity， 这个 graviton 是 massless， you know 是长程的，你这是长程的。这个是零质量那个，只有那么一个零质量，自旋为二，只有两个那个 polarization 的，那个是那个在它以上的激发态，一个，实际上这个质量是 n 是一个 integer， 往上数一二三四五啊什么这。当然这个 n 取决于你的 compactification 的形式，假设最简单的就是那个 torus 吧， torus compactification， 这就是类似这样一个结果。所以这都是 massive 的 state， 你产生出来这个以后呢，它当然会衰变，因为它是有质量的。它
那个自旋
还都是二，自旋 total 自旋都是二，引力子的自旋都是二，因为它是从你那个度规来的嘛，你 G mu nu 是 tensor field，所以它是从这个度规展开来的 ，graviton 是 spin two 的，所以它要是有质量的 graviton， 它是 spin two， 它有五个分量 ，two j plus one again， 这是 five components。五个呀，因为它是 two j plus one 有质量的，对，它为什么来了五个呢？它还跟对称性科学有关，就像 Higgs 的这个机制类似，就从几何的对称性科学来的。你最开始平直的时候，你有很多其他的 degree freedom， 你要是 compactify 以后呢，很多 degree freedom 就被它给吸收进来了，它就变成了有质量的。那质量从来也跟这个 Higgs 机制很类似的，很有意思的一种那个质量产生的机制，用几何方法来产生出来那个系那个对称性破坏，也可以认为是 spontaneous symmetry breaking， 因为你这个 origin Lagrangian 不具备是有一定对称性的，但是在这个最后的 compactification 以后，这个状态呢破坏了你这个原来对称性，也是有类似的这个 argument。 所以它每一个自旋为二的 massive particle has five degrees freedom。 所以这个它怎么看它呢？因为它自旋等于二的呀，这正常自旋二的时候，假设说你还看它衰变成那个双光子，那么你就看它俩的角分布，你把它做那个angular decomposition， 这个一定是 S 波的， 这 S 波是说明是 L 等于零的呀。那么 L 等于零的话呢，这里每一个自旋呢，自旋一、自旋二的光子呢都是一的呀。然后你把它做一个那个 partial expansion， 你就可以看出它的那个它的那个角分布是 flat 的呀，还是有 higher partial waves。那么就跟这一块的 one 什么的不一样。实际上这是一个很有意思的一个 exercise。我觉得要是有兴趣的同学可以算一下。我们最近算了那个，就是还算了一些 string resonances， 都在 LSE 里面算的，就没有算这样的，没有算 photon-photon 过程。其实可以算一下，做一下详细的 decomposition， 然后看一看到时到底应该那个怎么样区别这个，这是可以算的。都可以啊，啊，就衰变两个 Higgs 的更这那个是被压低了，因为你要衰变成两个 Higgs 的话，当时我记得有一个问题是就这儿嘛，你要衰变成两个 Higgs 的话，这两个 Higgs 全是自旋为零的，而这个自旋是二的，那实际你上来以后，你就是 S wave、P wave、D wave， 你上来以后就是你要angular momentum conservation 的话，你这个 L， 你这个 L 必须等于 J， 必须等于二，对不对？因为我这个自旋这个中间态自旋是二的。你两个末态的自旋全是零，那它总的角动量哪来呢？就是所有的 orbital angular momentum， 空间量子数，空间角动量量子数，叫空间轨道角动量量子数，谢谢。轨道角动量量子数是等于那个总角动量量子数等于二，那是 D wave。这 partial wave expansion 我希望你还能记得 partial wave expansion 的 leading order 是 S 波呀、P 波呀、D 波呀等等。那 D 波呢，实际上是那个是接近那个 threshold 附近是压低的嘛？那是这个对于这个动量速度那个速度的那个第五次方啊 ，something like that， 是原来是一次方，速度是一三次方五次方，好像是这样。所以那个是压低的，但也不是不可以做。你要是这个好观测也是可以做，但是它角分布就又不一样了。你要是 D wave 的话，你查那个 Clebsch 高振系数的话，那马上它就有好多好多那个震动的那个像了，那就有意思了。你去观测，你算你去实验室看就好了，实验室你可以看到它这个分布就不是平的了，就这样的。这就是这些证据，这所有的很多 Pion 的自旋，或者是那个其他很多自旋，都从类似的这 angular momentum 的那个 angular distribution 的那个 correlation 来的嘛，决定的。这个就比较复杂一点了。对，这个
因为这个东西刚刚补上一点，他这边以前我们讲的这个都是很单纯的。
对，应该讲一个具体模型，因为最早的时候 ，extra dimension 这 large extra dimension 并不需要引入苏西，并需要引入苏西，所以要从最简单入手的话呢，你还是要研究 extra dimension 的主要特性，或者是研究supersymmetry 的主要特性，不要把他们两个几乎不同的两个 motivation 放在一起。可是确实有一些模型是又在 X dimension 又在 SUSE 的。天津 probably will talk about large， right？ 天津 is one of the model builders， 他可能会讲到一些又有 X dimension 又有 supersymmetry 这样的 framework， 那就要具体看具体情况具体分析了。但是我觉得如果这个 X dimension particle 存在的话，它可能衰变成标准模型的粒子的那个情况啊更容易处理。即使有 supersymmetry 存在，你要没有理由来说 supersymmetry 的 decay branching fraction 是 much much larger 的话，那可能还是看那个标准模型这个更为容易，更为直接，更避免一些混乱。对，至少从运动学来讲也是合理的，除非它有相互作用有比较特殊，那是另一回事。
你如果单个模型，我可以很简单，比如说你把所有赛区算出来，然后就被你区分出来。如果我只要去这个实验里面，你做一个组合，就可以去增加很多的模型。你单个都可以做，这个好像范老师身上我们提到讲过这个事情，什么模型搭，对不对？但是就是说，你如果这种，比如说 BVO 书写率这个 FPL 咱们就这种，
你可能还要指定一个模型，你要指定一个具体模型才能做具体的评论。 不太好做一般评论。一般确实你一般来讲你说是对的，就是这个 search 的情况肯定会变了，这个 search 情况肯定会变很多。但是我觉得好像你要是真是想做得很仔细的话，你要指定一个模型，我们看到底有什么样的例子，到底有什么样的那个，做任何模型第一步就要先看有什么相互作用，什么样的那个衰变道的 branching 是多少。你要给了一个比较定量的这样一个图像的后下边呢，我就可以具体的按回答你。你要给我一个具体模型，我就可以具体的回答你。一般来讲呢比较困难，就像你说那我要有又有 technical 又有 SUSE 那会什么样呢，那这样一般的话来讲不太容易，这个不容易有定量的回答。定性的回答你说的是对，情况肯定会很复杂，很混乱。好吧，
第一个问题就是说，他那里算那个成交值产出的时候，为什么在视频里它会出现三个一定的，因为你不知道它是没有
什么几个交值产生，
就是成交值四个交值的视频里
二到二的交值啊，
对，二到二的交值是视频里所有的视频里不仅仅是那个就是说成交值对于情况的话，就是说它只要有
你说的可能是 color 吧？
对，
是不是 color 的不同的 color 方，可是不同。
但是它那个标号都一样，一二三四，它标起来都是一样，它没有任何的。
你说那个一标一二三四，可能是按动量标的。你按动量标呢？你比如说这是 P1、P2。P3、P4，那么在这里边可能是 color， 是不是 color structure 里边？
它没有，它画出来的都是那
个。你说的可能是 color 有 color 结构不一样啊，还是怎么回事？这你要算的话，这是一个图啊。
对，但是它画的都是就是一二三，没有顺序是一二三。
你不是说它包括了，不是说它包括了这样的？
是视频里，就是一个视频里。
我觉得你说的是这另一种 decomposition， 那叫这是另一种分解，可能是跟它主要是跟它的这个color internal quantum number 有关的另一个，可能是那个。说的是谁？是什么样的计算呢？我想想啊，这个我想你可能说还是说的 color decomposition， 还是色那个色分解的那部分，色因子分解。我认为你有那个 reference， 你拿了 reference， 咱们我给你看一下。你说你在哪看到的这个？
这个是自己画的。
这不是一个吗？你要是画成。Metagraph 画成了三个一样
的。
这是 Metagraph 里边产出来的啊。
嗯，就是视交子的生成。
我想啊，它可能是这个不是四个图，这是说它那个它一定做了平均，它把它用 color structure 写出以后啊，写成同一个 color structure， 它已经做了平均了，因为你每一个平均的权重不一样， 他要把它写叫取叫取叫取成那个写成同一行的话呢，其实每一个是贡献了三分之一的这个 color in， 所以他加多加图是要跟他那个 color 那个 structure 平均一样。
应该看它产生的那个 code。
对。
对，
对，
我看过他的 code， 他关于这个他是有这个，
他把那个 color 给重写了，他把 color 重组了，最可能是呢，他把 color 最后写完的，把 color 写到这样的基石里面，这个基石是正交的，有这个图和另一套图是正交的，所以他不用那个算 interference， 但你把它画成正交的基以后啊，你有一些系数啊是重组的，所以有些系数实际上是变成三分之一了。这每一个变成三分之一，它多加了一项，然后那个多加了一个图，它跟原来那个系数能弄成一样。它这一定是 color recombination 以后，你读一下它那个我不记得这个它那个 manual 了，你读一下它那个解说，它一定是这色那个 color 结构的色 color 结构的问题，不是这个
解说，
它一定是 color 里边的 color 里边的，你看这 color index。
这个它分解是用它是用什么东西分解的？这个 matter graph 它是用 color flow 还是那个 fundamental 的那个 representation？
好像是用 fundamental representation 重新做线性组合，把不同的基石是写成正交的基石之类的。你看一下。
那我
不
看。
你回看。
我
知道。
始终没想明白。
不，它跟我们想的意思不是一样的，不是你说它有多少 diagram， 这一定是一个 diagram 有不同的 color 结构，就是不同的 color 结构。行，怎么样？下去以后我们别的时候也可以聊，任何时候那个你要有问题的话都可以来找我讨论了。怎么样？到时间是不是没有？
啊，到时间。还有吗？还有剩下
没有了？就哎，谢。
等了两个半个小时。
5:20是不是？5:20到。你完了再说吧。
虽然我们还有很多没有讨论完，但是这个时间已经到了。
我一直在，有问题你就来讨论就好了。
这几天韩老师一直会在找，所以大家有什么问题直接可以。那我们再感谢韩老师给我们。
不客气了。